WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are getting up on the Radio Row week, but we are not going to the Super Bowl. We are having a promotion for Crab Cake Row called A Cup of Soup or Bowl, and we're doing it for the Maryland Food Bank. Beginning on February 5th, we'll broadcast live 8 hours a day, 5 days a week from five different places, including Costas, where I'm wearing my Costas shirt, and that will be on Tuesday. At some point, we'll get this guy. They'll pull him out of Texas up here to Maryland. We'll make him an official Marylander. We'll get him a bumper sticker for his car, and we'll get him some appropriate crabs and crab cakes. But for now, he is down there with his Houston Astros and the Houston Texans that he covers and covered the Houston Oilers for many, many, many years at the Houston Chronicle. He's our friend. He is the general of all of us who cover all of these football games. You welcome John McClain, the other John McClain. How do you do at Christmas time when the other John McClain and Yippee-ki-yay is taking over Christmas, John McClain?
I've been getting that nester since the movie came out in 1988, and so I'm used to it. At one point, I was, as you can imagine, every time I check into a hotel or anything, anywhere they see my driver's license, now they go, John McClain, have you? I say, yes. They say, you know what I'm going to ask you? I said, yes. And I get asked a lot, is it a Christmas movie? I say, of course it's a Christmas movie. Every old theme is Christmas. He's going to a Christmas party. It gets him in all the grief to begin with.
Well, it's a fantastic film. You have made a life of this Oilers thing. First things first, we'll get to the Texans. But you had warned me that the Oilers thing was coming down the pipe, right? And everybody knows I was an Oilers fan. I think I'm an Oilers fan. Boy, they're wearing this the clothing a couple times this year. I thought it was in poor taste all the way around. But more than that, it's made me less interested in wearing it, because every time I put a Titans game on, everybody's got some Derrick Henry jersey that looks like Earl Campbell. And it just, John, it's weirding me out. Does it weird you out? Seriously?
Here's the way I look at it. Fans in Houston infuriated. Media in Houston infuriated. I liked it because it's the only place we'd ever see it again. Either they wear it in Tennessee or it's never worn it again. I told that, covered that team for 20 years. Dan Pastorini loves it. Warren Moon loves it. Robert Bazile, Billy White Shoes Johnson. The only Oiler player who doesn't like it is Bruce Matthews. And Bruce Matthews said Columbia Blue should always belong to Houston. But the problem is Texans can't wear it. So if all those old Oilers like seeing it, I do. And I got to tell you, I didn't pay much attention when they wore it at the Atlanta home game. But when they did against the Texans, they had the Oil Derrick at midfield. And they had Oilers in the end zones. It brought back some great memories. So I'm not like most people in Houston. I don't have a problem with it. Texans are going to have new uniforms next year, and they're going to unveil them at the draft. And I think they may have a what they call an Italian blue stripe on their uniforms. We'll see if that's actually going to happen.
Well, John, we got a football game here. And listen, I didn't call you much. I mean, you know, I thought the Orioles would get together with the Astros, and the Rangers had other ideas. You're an Astro follower all of your life, but you've chronicled football professionally longer and better than just about anybody that's breathing at this point, 50 years of doing this thing. This Texan story for teams you've covered, and you covered Run and Shoot, you covered Love You Blue, you covered Earl Campbell, and all of these teams, the Schaub era when it came there, you have ties to the Titans and Mike Vrabel and everything that happened there. But this Texans team has been fascinating, come from nowhere. I had you on week one. We played the first week of the year, and I thought they'll be among the five worst teams in the NFL this year. I mean, I just thought that because they were last year, and how good can you be with a rookie coach and a rookie quarterback? And they're coming in this week, and I know they're, you know, 9-point dog or whatever it is. I'm giving them a punch because I've watched them play and I've watched them improve. And when you have a quarterback, you have everything, and you've seen a lot. Where are you on this? This is unique even to you, dude.
They start the first, D'Amico Ryan's first season, 0-2, lost at Baltimore, then lost here to Indianapolis. And since then, they're 11-5. It's amazing because they lost at Atlanta on a field goal with no time left, lost at Carolina on a field goal with no time left. And that's when C.J. Stroud told the media after the game, I would like to have more explosive plays. So you have not only a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach, you have a rookie coordinator and play caller in Bobby Slowick. So he had growing pains too. So from that point until Stroud suffered his concussion, they were second in the NFL in plays of 25 or more yards to the 49ers. And their offense, it's amazing. They've played four left tackles, four left guards, four centers, one right guard, and three right tackles. And the lack of continuity up front affected them a lot up until at least their backups who were playing were solidified. And so the offensive lines played better, but Stroud just continues to improve. And the thing that he does best, of course, he doesn't turn the ball over. Five interceptions, the best touchdown interception ratio in the NFL, which is amazing because he doesn't dump the ball off a lot. He wants to throw it down the field. He lost Tank Dell, his second best receiving threat, to Nico Collins 6 games ago. Other receivers, Robert Woods, Noah Brown, they've been in and out of the lineup with the injuries, but tight ends have stepped up. So he spreads the ball around. He likes to go down the field. 8.4 yard average per attempt, amazing for a rookie. So the fact there, I think now counting the playoff game, that they're plus 12 in turnover differential. For regular season, they were plus 10. And of course, the Browns had the most turnovers, most interceptions, and Flacco had been an interception machine, and it finally caught up to him in that divisional playoff game. But Baltimore's favored. Baltimore should win no matter what happens. It's still, when people look back, will think it's a great season with a lot of positivity going into the offseason. And I have not been able to say that, Nestor, since the offseason after 2018, because in 2009 offseason, even though they'd beaten Buffalo in the playoffs and they lost to Kansas City after leading 24-0, Bill O'Brien traded DeAndre Hopkins and the negativity cranked up and just continued. And so now people love D'Amico Ryans. They love C.J. Stroud. And they're going to have to go to the Super Bowl before they would equal the Love You Blue Oilers. But this team is on its way to being the second most popular in our city's history.
Now, you just said something. You covered football a long, long time, and I got feel for these people in Detroit. You know, my buddy Schwartz coached the team. Bill Keene has been up there. People, I have fans and friends of mine that never seen them win a playoff game, or you hadn't seen it since they were 12 years old or whatever. And I think of Cleveland as being sort of the same thing. What Flacco did the last couple of weeks and having all that passion and all that energy. I mean, Texas is a football state. And, you know, Dallas, and I know it's been a little while with Jerry and Jimmy, and they did all that a couple of weeks ago trying to make nice. But you guys have never won either. Right. I mean, Houston's a little bit of a poverty city in regard to Super Bowl riches and playing in games and having those kinds of football teams. We're on the cusp of maybe doing it for the third time since we got back into the league with the third group of people as the one seed here. You know, Houston's been kind of long suffering, right? And sort of waiting for this, and especially the second time around getting the franchise back, just trying to make good on a January. I mean, we were here. We knocked them out a couple of times, right? I mean, Joe Flacco's era, the red jerseys, all of that that's happened there. This feels like the best thing that's ever happened to the Texans.
The first playoff year in 2011 under Gary Kubiak was the best because J.J. Watt had an interception return for a touchdown, a wild card victory here over Cincinnati. And this game that they won Sunday over the Browns was the best since that one. Because in 2012, they were 12-4, best record in franchise history, but they had a chance to cinch home field advantage, and they blew it at the end, even though they beat Cincinnati again. Then they lost to New England, as they did Baltimore the year before. D'Amico Ryans' last game as a Texans was in that game in Baltimore, and I'm doing a column today that if the Texans could upset the Ravens, Houston would have a team in the AFC Championship game for the first time since the Love You Blue Oilers after the 79 season when they lost a second consecutive championship game at Three River Stadium. And so what people really be excited about is next season. They got a lot of cap money, fourth in the league. It's so interesting, Nestor. Back when Nick Caserio pulled off his trade to move up to get the third overall pick to get Will Anderson Jr., who's been tremendous, to solve their two biggest issues, quarterback and an edge rusher. A lot of people killed him because he gave up his number one in 2024 because they said he could be giving up one of the top three picks. And most people predicted Arizona would have the top pick. Houston would have two. Arizona would get Houston's pick. They'd take Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. and be set for a decade. Well, right now, it's very ironic. The Texans beating Cleveland means the Texans' last first-round pick for Deshaun Watson will be higher than pick the Arizona got in the Will Anderson trade.
Well, you can't predict any of these things. It's certainly in the beginning. Where, at what point did you see the light with Stroud that this is going to be a good pick as opposed to a bad pick at quarterback? And I don't say David Carr was a bad, but you've had these franchise guys come in at various points to say this guy can be a difference maker. We're going to be talking about him in the middle of January as being an elite quarterback, a capable of winning you a Super Bowl quarterback.
I didn't see it in the first game at Baltimore, even though it was 7-6 in the third quarter before the Ravens broke it open. And Stroud took them to a couple of long drives against the Ravens, but they ended up in field goals. But the next game where they got beat here by 11 by Indianapolis, he threw for 384 yards because he's playing catch up in the second half. He threw for 190 in the fourth quarter when the Colts knew he was going to be throwing the ball. And that's the first time I started to think, well, maybe this guy's going to be worth the second pick. And then the next 2 weeks, you know, they were 0-2. I picked them to win six. And I'm like, why did I pick them so high? So the next two, they win by 20 at Jacksonville. And they beat Pittsburgh here by 24 to be 2-2. And all of a sudden, I'm like, aha, that's why they've been so high on him. It wasn't an all-season program. It wasn't OTAs. It wasn't preseason. They didn't just gift him the starting job. D'Amico Ryans waited till late, even though we all knew he was going to be the starter. But they want him to prove himself. And some of the things that people like about Stroud, Nestor, are this. I remember a story off season. They had a team party, and they had it over at their facility. And I was told that when Stroud got there, during the 2 or 3 hours of the party, he worked his way around to every table to talk to a player and his wife and the kids too, sponsors and everything. And I thought, well, okay, that's, I asked him, I said, you ever had another rookie do that? No. And then another thing, in during training camp, the defensive coordinator, Matt Burke, said every time he'd walk off the field, Stroud would come up to him and walk with him and start asking a bunch of questions about this coverage, this blitz, that blitz. And Jalen Petrie, their second-year safety, said he'd been out several times with Stroud to dinner or out on the town, and all Stroud wanted to do was talk about football. He didn't want to talk about music. He didn't want to talk about women. He didn't want to talk to you about the usual things guys talk about, sports. All he wanted to do was pick Petrie's brain about ball. And so his decision-making and his accuracy are the two things that have been the most impressive about him, his unflappability. He reminds me of Warren Moon in his coolness, how cool he is in the pocket, off the field, interviews, everything.
It takes time when a franchise is wounded, right? Like, John, I the Ray Rice thing here and the Wembley knee politically here. I had a guy the other day say, I don't watch the Ravens anymore, Wembley knee. I'm like, 6 years later, 7 years later, I guess you're not watching football anymore. In Houston, when your quarterback is a sexual predator and gets dealt off, and I've had Browns fans battle with Deshaun Watson, and just, and I know you're close with McNair and the family there and everything that went on, not Steve McNair, I'm talking about Bob McNair from the Houston Texans, that they had some brand issues and brand awareness issues as well, but nothing makes your brand worse than when your running back punches his wife in a glass elevator and they try to hide it. It takes a long, and they're burning the jerseys. Now they're honoring him. He was the player of the game. They honored Ray Rice 2 weeks ago here. 10 years changes a lot. But in your case in Houston, when I saw the fans there the other day, I'm thinking, you know, they were all pretty pissed off in a lot of ways. And to your point, every time I talk to you, it's easy to be an Astros fan, right? They win, you go, you can get into the cheating thing later. I know where you are on Altuve and all that. But there are other options, right? And the Texans never felt like option number one ever there. And the Astros have really come on the last decade to be this thing. And the Texans have done some shameful things. And to get it all sort of back under into the civic fold that people want to come out and be supportive, that the kid, that this kid being supernatural in that way really helps, right? I mean, he's helping everything about it, not
now,
just.
It wasn't the Texans that did shameful things. It was Deshaun Watson. And the fact he will never get honored here like Ray Rice has been by the Ravens. It will never happen here. And one of the reasons people are so bitter for him, they finally had a franchise quarterback. He was great in 2020 in every way. The team wasn't, but he was. And then for right after the season, say he wanted to be traded, then those lawsuits started piling up. It was just an incredible controversy. Then you have Bill O'Brien. Bill was so disliked here. When they won four division titles, two playoff games, fans didn't like him. Bill went out of his way not to be liked and not to care. He didn't embrace anything. But I thought Bill was a good coach. He shouldn't have been general manager. And said then the Jack Easterby shenanigans. So when the McNairs finally got rid of, they had fired O'Brien, they got rid of Easterby, and then they fired Lovie Smith, and Lovie should have been fired because he had an offensive coordinator. Pep Hamilton had worst offense I've seen in Houston. And so then when they interviewed a bunch of really impressive coaches around the league, Shane Steichen, Ben Johnson, but when Callahan and McNair, they wanted D'Amico, but they don't make the general manager do things. And when they had their Zoom with him initially in Caserio, they all finished the interview and the Zoom cut off and Caserio turned to them and said, we got to get D'Amico here and we can't let him leave. And the McNairs went, whew, because they weren't going to make him take him, but it's all worked out so well. And Nick Caserio's done a fabulous job of rebuilding this franchise, tore it down, passed the studs to the foundation and built back up. And then the McNairs, they their worst decision is believing in people and listening to people like Bill O'Brien. And Caserio was one of the people who recommended Jack Easterby to O'Brien because they'd all been to, he'd been to New England with him. But right now, Caserio's done a great job, should be a candidate for executive of the year. D'Amico probably going to lose to Stefanski, coach of the year, but he's deserving. Stroud, of course, for offensive rookie of the year. But people here are so excited about this franchise. And the Astros haven't done much in the offseason. They haven't made any hires. They're about to, they just announced today Kendall Graveman, one of the relievers they were planning on, just had shoulder surgery. And I'm thinking, why are you getting shoulder surgery now? Done for the season. Contracts expired. Hector Neris, Phil Maton, Ryan Stanek, all those guys played a big role in winning a World Series 2 years ago and going to the championship game of the ALCS again. And Neris, they had this budget. Jim Crane won't overpay, but their bullpen's going to be hurting. And while I see everything that's going on with the Orioles, with Mike Elias doing exactly what happened here to rebuild that franchise, it's going to be so much fun to watch them. But right now, at this moment, we used to be a football town forever, and the Astros took it back over. Right now, everybody's talking about the Texans. They're not talking about the Astros because there's been no reason to talk about the Astros for months. And the Astros are, you know, pitchers and catchers report across the league next month, but people here are all football. So we're not going to get the Texans taking over as a football town again anytime soon because the Astros have been so consistent. But first time, Nestor, in a long time, I can feel the landscape changing a little bit.
How do they win? I mean, you know, they're going to be a 10-point dog by the time the whole thing gets going here. You know, I talked to everybody about the Ravens, and it's been a long time. I've been doing this 32 years, man. We've never been here like this where we're expected to win the Super Bowl. The hunted, the MVP, the best players, the Harbaugh shine of the national championship and the cheaters in Michigan, and he'll have a job by the end of the week. And Harbaugh's about to really have, as Billick used to say to me, bringing a U-Haul to the back of my office and hauling all the coaches out because it feels like it's a now or never with the Ravens. They've been so good this year. Contracts, where they are, Matt Ibike, Patrick Queen, all these guys are going to wind up not being able to afford Odell Beckham. They have a lot of free agents, but they're going to lose coaches soon. And, hey, you know this better than anybody. A lot of distractions when you're interviewing for five or six jobs in a week, even on Zoom if you're Mike McDonald this week.
Well, Bobby Slowick's doing the same thing. Their offensive coordinator, I guess he is. You can. And he's had four teams reach out to him so far. Thing about Lamar Jackson, he's going to be MVP for the second time. He needs to win another playoff game. You know, that's a very important if you want to be considered among the elite of all times. You got to start winning playoff games. And something I'm curious about is who the Texans will have spying on him, and can they even do a reasonable job of doing that? But Texans defense has been good. The Ravens should win this game. I predicted they'll win this game. But the Texans, as long as they don't get blown out, and the Texans are not saying that. I'm saying this as somebody governing the team, and I'm speaking, I know, for the media and the fans. They'll be disappointed if the Ravens win. But in about a week, they'll look back on this season and where they should have been and were projected to be, and it will be one of the most exciting seasons in the history of Houston sports. Like the Astros in 15 came out of nowhere, beat the Yankees in a wild card game before they lost. That's kind of the situation it reminds everyone of.
Remember meeting D'Amico Ryans? I sort of remember every time I met a Raven player for the first time after a draft, or hi, how are you, or what that is. I mean, to think that he would be a real shaping guy for this franchise all these years later. You remember him as a puppy, I'm sure.
I met him the day after he was drafted, and where his locker was situated in the locker room, and he was always there. He didn't run and hide. And I remember about 3 years in, I told him, I said, you know, you're sounding more and more like a coach. You might ought to think about coaching when your career's over. Like I told Eric Winston, I said, you sound like a broadcaster. And Andy Kalou, you sound like a broadcaster. And some guys have done that, but in D'Amico's case, he just sounded like a leader, a coach, the way he broke things down. And I'll tell you an interesting story. 2 years ago, Texans ended up, they played late in the season in Santa Clara, and I called him, did a column on him, where he was. People were just starting to talk about a buzz, him being head coach. And he did an interview and then came back and said, I need another year as a coordinator. That's what they're hoping Bobby Slowick will do here. Believe I got to get a second year as a coordinator. But anyway, so last year the Texans opened. The first game done on Amazon on Thursday night was here against the 49ers. And I went over and hung out outside the Niners locker room, say hello to Kyle Shanahan, a bunch of the coaches like D'Amico. And D'Amico came up, shook hands, hugged. I said, let me be the first to congratulate you. He said, on what? I said, on being an NFL head coach next year. And he said, oh, man, I'm a long way from that. I said, you may think you are, but you aren't. You're going to be a head coach. I just wish I had said here.
Well, in the case of Houston, and for what that is, I mean, they recognize all of this, right? It's been easy and familiar to come back to for a playoff game this week because this has been dangled in front of them, but not this was dangled with Deshaun Watson, to your point. It was probably one of the reasons people were so angry, because that could have been a very good thing. You felt like you might have been into covering 5 to 8 years of good football the way we've had it here, the way maybe we feel about baseball here now, that once you get those pieces together, this has probably been a very, very heartening 4 months of time for you, because you probably thought this was years in the making. This wasn't something that was going to turn around quickly, right?
No, the longer you suffer, the more you like to celebrate, the louder you celebrate. And the thing about the Ravens, because of Jackson, they're an exciting team. Yeah, they run the ball a lot. They lead the NFL in rushing. But when you watch the Ravens, you can't take your eyes off of Lamar, because you don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't know what he's going to do. And that's kind of the way it is Stroud. Now, he doesn't run like Jackson. He could if he needed to, not like Jackson, but he could be a threat at running, but he wants to throw the ball down the field. But every time he drops back, you kind of hold your breath because you want to see what he's going to do. And some of his passes, the pinpoint accuracy is breathtaking. And so that's the thing. They're exciting teams. There's some teams pretty good and they're not exciting. But, man, these two teams are, and I can't wait to see them square off up at M&T Bank Stadium. And I picked the Ravens before the season on all my weekly 18 shows, podcasts, and TV. And the reason I did it was because I wanted to be different. Nobody else was. I'd like to say, oh, yeah, I saw this. I knew Lamar was going to stay healthy for the first time in 3 years. But I did it, and so now – if the Ravens win at all, I'll get a lot of good recognition because I picked them when they beat the Niners that year. And I got a lot of good attention out of that. But this one, I didn't do it because of any insight. I did it just to be different. And so if the Ravens beat the Texans, I want the Ravens to win the Super Bowl. So I can brag a little bit.
John McClain's been doing it for 5 decades down in Houston, Texas, back from the Oilers to the Texans and, of course, the Astros. He will be voting on the Pro Football Hall of Fame coming up this week as well. So at some point, I'm not doing the radio row thing in Vegas. I'm doing this crab cake row thing or whatever. But we could sit here and go at it all night. Give me the plugs for what you're doing with your life, because things have been different and changed, and you were at the Chronicle for a million years. Now you do a million different things.
I retired from the Houston Chronicle after 47 years, so I get my pension and I can do commercials on my radio station. I write 5 columns a week for sportsradio610.com, no paywall, which is the Texans flagship, and I do 6 weekly appearances and 3 podcasts, and I still do weekly shows in Nashville, Knoxville, Austin, Waco, San Antonio, and Las Vegas.
That's all he does. He's in semi-retirement. Sure he is. John McClain, you can find him, McClain on NFL, with the underscores. There's only one John McClain. So people think there's a different John McClain from the movies. That's a fictional John. This is a real John McClain down in Texas. Enjoy the game. Crab cakes with you soon, all right?
It's going to be a great, great setting, great football. Can't wait. Nestor, thank you very much, as always.
And then we get to sit around on Sunday night and watch Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes shoot him up. Big weekend this weekend. Luke's out in Owings Mills. We're doing Crab Cake Row, a cup of soup or bowl for the Maryland Food Bank beginning on February 5th. Stay with us. We're BaltimorePositive.com.